We waste no time in getting to our NHL Insider. Morning, Elliot. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Are you at a
Tiki hut
recital or something?
No, my son. I got to move away. My son's playing.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, that's good.
This is good.
Does he take requests?
Does he know Sebastian Bach?
Does he know any Skid Row?
He's on a first-name basis with many famous composers.
I'm sure he is. It was great watching you guys last night try and navigate your way through what you were watching with the Vegas and Vancouver game, which basically just came down to this kid is standing on his head and Vegas is doing everything but score. You can't. There's nothing to analyze except just tip your cap at what this kid has done through six periods.
Oh, there's no question about that. And, you know, I think the thing is, too, is that Vancouver is obviously doing the Muhammad Ali circa 1970 rope-a-dope strategy, right? They've decided they're going to concede the ice. They're going to decide where they're going to give up chances from, or at least try to anyway, and hope between their power play and a counterattack here and there, they're going to score enough to win. And that's now worked for two straight games. They've been outshot. They've been outchanced. Vegas missed the net a lot last night, especially in the first two periods. But, you know, they've basically just said they're going to be able to say that this is our game plan. And I think they're comfortable playing it, and they seriously seem to believe in the goaltender to hang on when things go sideways.
So hang on. Are they deciding to play this way?
I was going
to
say, is that a strategy?
What Vegas has dictated?
Yeah.
No, well, I think it's both. Like, the one thing I really do believe, and Rhett, like, you can decide if I'm nuts on this, is that when you can decide where shots are going to come from, you can say, okay, you know, if we're going to concede, we're going to concede here. And I think Vancouver, like, especially in game five, if you go back to game five, the ice was tilted, but they didn't give up a ton of great chances. I thought last night, particularly in the first period, they gave up some great chances. But I think generally they kind of look at it like we're going to protect the middle and we're going to do everything we can. And every team tries to do that. But I think that everything they do is about protecting the middle and trying to keep the Knights outside. And I think for the most part, they're doing it. I think they realize they can't get into a shootout with these guys. They could get into a shootout a bit with Minnesota. They could get into a shootout a bit with St. Louis, but they can't get into one with these guys.
Sometimes it just morphs into that, right? It's just an acceptance that, geez, this is how we're doing it. And you just start to play a style.
And that's what I think it is.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. And everyone's buying into it. It's not a bad thing, sure. It's a little one-sided, but if everyone's in on it, they're blocking shots, they're taking away the middle, like you said, it's a strategy that has had some level of success in the past, and clearly that with Demko playing the way he's playing, like it's continuing for the Canucks right now. It's going to be tough to continue to play that way. I know that was kind of the style we had to play here in 04, and I played it in 99 with the Sabres, and even in 96 with Florida, but it's not, the coaches don't go into the playoffs and drop this game plan. It's something that the players almost, like I said, they morph, they adopt, and they realize, okay, if we're going to win, we got to do these things too.
I think that's totally what it is. Like, I just think top to bottom, you know, people thought that maybe DeBoer was politically incorrect to say it, but they are a much deeper team than Vancouver. They are.
Mm-hmm.
And they've owned the series. And, you know, like I said, Vancouver didn't have to play this way against Minnesota. And they didn't have to play this way against St. Louis. But they got to play this way now. And I think some of it probably was also, too, like, you know, Demko has been up to the challenge, but you don't know what you're getting going into that game five, guys.
No.
Like, your MVP this year is now out. And I think he's out for the series. I don't think he's playing tonight, and I think it's possible he's out for longer if they win. But all of a sudden, you've got, you know, Demko thrown in, and because of the wild setup that we have here, you know, he's barely played. he doesn't get a lot of practice time even. Like, how much practice time do you think he's getting?
You don't want any now. He's
yeah, like, I mean, like, so you're sitting there and you're thinking, holy smokes, like, we have to protect this guy. Now, the kid is showing in 120 minutes that he can really play. But, you know, what are you thinking going in? You're thinking, holy smokes, like, we have to play a certain way here.
Hey, Elliot, did you notice, yeah, and maybe I'm stretching it, but I thought in the third period watching Demko, he looked exhausted. Do you think that could play into it? And am I wrong in seeing that? It seemed to me every time there was a whistle, he was, and maybe it's his routine, but he was leaning on that net.
Yes, Kelly thought that, and I think that the fact that Kelly thinks that probably indicates that you're right. The one thing I thought was interesting, though, was he was the post-game interview guest with Harner Ryan, and he wasn't like sometimes guys come on in those post-game or between periods and intermissions, and they can barely breathe. Demko wasn't like that, but I think during the game, Rhett, he looked tired. Now, because I am an exceptionally prepared broadcaster, I spent last night. I got home. I crawled into bed. I pulled out my laptop and I just started looking at Demko's history and back to backs, obviously because there is one. And he hasn't done it a lot in the last couple of years, but in his first 2 years as a pro, which were 17, 18, and 18, 19, he did it about 15 times and his numbers were really good. But this is a different situation. Like, this will be the best. This will be the most intense pressure situation he's ever done it. This will be the best team he's ever done it against. And as you mentioned, it was a high intensity game last night where he looked tired. So like Green last night was saying, well, whoever it is, Markstrom or Demko, we're going to be fine. Like, I was just like rolling my eyes at that. I think it's Demko or Domingue, and I think we all know where that choice is going.
Now, Vegas is absolutely gripping sticks. And the other question I had for you was, they're deep. Clearly, they're a deep team, but they don't have a MacKinnon. As good as Stone is, and Marchessault is, they don't have a, I don't think, yes, superstar elite, even a Pedersen. You know what I mean? Like a MacKinnon that just takes over by himself. Is that hurting them? Or this is just circumstantial and they just got to keep at it?
I think it's just circumstantial. Like, maybe they don't have a MacKinnon or a Pedersen, but they have a lot of really good players. Like, I think, Rhett, they're getting the chances. Pedersen caught stolen on a breakaway last night. I thought it was a great defensive play. Like, they're getting the chance. Like, you know, right after Vancouver scored to make it 1-0, Carlson walked right in off the faceoff, and Demko just stoned him.
I like that. I like what you said with the Stone had the breakaway there, and Pedersen came, and immediately Stone wanted a penalty. And to me, that was a perfect example of how frustrated Vegas is, and they can't put the puck behind them.
Yeah, I agree. And Stone's also a good interview, too, generally, in his second intermission interview with Harner Ryan. I think two questions, he said eight words. Like, it's like, I think that those guys, like, I think they're frustrated. There's no question. And, you know, like, someone made the point to me this morning when I was chatting with someone, you know, Demko is, tonight's the first time that Demko is really facing pressure in terms of expectation. You know, like, all the pressure, like Vegas should have won this series already, right? You're up 3-1, their number one goalie's out. They're putting in a guy who hasn't played, and you're getting stoned. And you can see the tension going on Vegas. Like, I do think this is a bit of an expectation now on Demko, a bit, but the real expectations are with Vegas. Like, if they lose this one tonight, it's a disaster for them.
So give us some big picture context on this decision that Jim Benning and the Canucks have to make. It's been reported by yourself and others that negotiations on an extension weren't going well prior to the playoffs starting in the bubble. And now you're getting a peek at a kid that you drafted way back in the mid-2010s and have invested a ton of time in developing. And you probably can't have them both unless you want to let Ron Francis really take advantage of you by not selecting one of the two. How does this, what we've seen in the last 48 hours, change that decision or at least affect it in your mind?
Well, I think it gives you more confidence in Demko to be your guy. That's number one. Like, I do think that hanging over the Markstrom negotiations has been the expansion draft. I think there's two parts to this negotiation. The term and value of the contract is A, and what it prevents you or allows you to do next year in the expansion draft is B. And I think both those parts have been an issue. I think you're looking at this, and I think if you're Vancouver, you're more comfortable now with the idea of, do you make Demko your starter next year and go get someone else to back him up? Like, you go get like a what if your pairing next year is Demko Greiss or Demko Talbot or Demko Khudobin, like something like that? Is that the direction you go in? You probably feel a lot more comfortable about that. But I do believe the whole specter of the expansion draft, Ryan, has been as big a factor in the negotiations as the term and salary number.
And so what is, I mean, I already thought the goaltending market was going to be fascinating, but if we know Markstrom is there come, November 17th or whenever free agency is, Leonard could be there. There's a thought that Marc-Andre Fleury could be moved. We hear Freddie Anderson's name all the time. Talbot, Greiss, Hudobin, you mentioned. Holtby's a free agent. Like, this is wild.
It's the biggest one ever. Like, for goaltenders, you know, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. Someone was pointing out to me that if you look at it, Vegas's number one guy is a UFA. Vancouver's number one guy until two nights ago is a UFA. The Islanders' number two guy, who's a pretty decent goalie, is a UFA. Like, have you ever seen anything like that in the Final Four before? And off the top of my head, I couldn't think of anything. And as you mentioned, and it's not just like, it's guys, like, there's options there for you to go out and find guys who are either starters or co-sharers or number twos. Like, there's a lot of different options out there. And hey, we saw Montreal go out in the trade market and say, hey, we got a number two, a good backup for Carey Price. So, there's a lot of options out there. I mentioned in Toronto this morning that I know the Toronto GM Kyle Dubas has called Freddie Anderson, I think, twice to let him know what's going on. I don't think Dubas likes the narrative that's being played out there that they're shopping him. I believe he called him to tell him, look, we're not, but we have been asked about you. I think he wants to keep him apprised of what's going on. But yes, Ryan, I think that if you're patient, you're going to have a lot of options.
Crazy. And so give us more context on your view of that Montreal trade, because the Habs did have some cap space, but is that the best used for it, to have $15 million now invested in goalies and it's an expiring deal for Allen? We were scratching our heads at that one, thinking, like, doesn't St. Louis get everything they want here?
Well, I actually kind of got it from Montreal. Yes, it's weird to see $15 million in goalies, but they can handle it for a year. Like, they got a lot of cap room. And so I look at it this way. It's not a long-term thing. It's for 1 year that they feel they can handle. They have a lot of cap room. You know, if you look at Montreal the last 3 years, their goalies, when Price didn't play, 3.25 goals against average, .902 save percentage. And, you know, like, that's killed them. And, you know, I think they look at it like, we have Caden Primo. Maybe in a year he's ready, and we'll see where we are with Jake Allen. Like, let me ask you something. If you, Ryan, if you go out and you sign one of those guys, are you getting them for 1 year at 4.3?
No, of course not. Hudobin and Grace, all those guys are going to want some
term. That's what I think Montreal is saying.
And my counter, though, would be, like, we've seen teams get so rewarded for taking on onerous contracts. Like, I look at the Patrick Marleau deal to Carolina. They got a free first rounder. If you're going to help St. Louis in that cap pinch, I would have thought the third would be going the other way. I mean, they must love Jake Allen, which is unusual because he hasn't really been great. He's had a chance to be the number one. It didn't work.
I understand the argument. I get that. But, you know, I do understand what you're saying. I just think that Montreal decided they wanted to know what their option was. And they decided that this was going to be their move. And they were going to do it. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, that kind of happens here is that I wonder if Montreal is and this will I can only determine by what happens in the future. I wonder if Montreal, with all their cap room, is something else they're doing. And they just wanted to have an answer as to what their situation was going to be. I kind of wonder about that. Like, I wonder if this is I want to have some certainty so I know what else I can do.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't it feel like you're waiting for something else to drop?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because, look, like, you know, Bergevin is coming up to the end of his contract. You know, there's going to be more expectation on them now. They're two big centers. Kids took big steps. Like, this says to me that he's going to cook up something else.
Elliot Friedman is our guest. He's our NHL insider. I have just some kind of rapid-fire ones here. You don't need to go too far in-depth, depending.
Okay. Keep it short. Yep. Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
The Arizona Coyotes, Taylor Hall, we had read they were maybe trying to have overtures once again. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I know you had him as a potential trade target.
I would be surprised if Hall re-signs in Arizona. That doesn't mean I don't think Arizona will try, but I would be surprised if he re-signs there. I think he's going to test the market, at least first. That's number one. Ekman-Larsson, I mean, we'll see. I think there's a possibility that he gets traded. I think he's open to it. And I do think they're getting calls about him already, about what they're thinking of doing. It's a tough contract, but, you know, I think there's interest.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just double back, I guess, on Hall. What does a Hall deal look like in your mind?
That's a really good question, because I think there's going to be – I think he's going to get teams, good teams, because he said that it's a situation, right? He wants to win. I think that you're going to see some teams offer him short-term, bigger money, or teams who think they're close.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to come down to what does he want? Does he want the big money or the big term? Or is he willing to take still good money but less term to go to good situations? Because I think those options are going to be out there. Like, one team I look at is Colorado. Next year is going to be an all-in year for the Avalanche.
You know, 1 year, $12 million. Come play with us, Taylor.
Yeah,
you know they could do it. I think regardless of what happens now, I mean, hey, maybe if they win the Cup, it all changes. I don't know. But I do think next year is going to be an all-in year for Colorado. That's the plan. And remember, they did it with Panarin last year. They offered him a short-term deal at big money. And, you know, like they were in on it. So it wouldn't surprise me.
I want to double back to Montreal. It may or may not have something to do with the deal earlier this week. But Max Domi fires his agent, and the seems like the tone out of there is that he's played his last game as a Hab.
Well, hey, look, I think that they're going to get offers for him. There's no question about it. I don't know that he's demanded a trade or anything like that. But what I do think is that, you know, his arbitration number is going to be in the fives. And next year, Montreal can handle it. I think they can if they want to. But then you're talking about you got to sign him to a long-term deal. And, you know, it wasn't all his fault. He had to stay out of training camp for a while until they could figure out his medical situation and COVID. And when he came back, he was playing catch up the whole time, but it's clear him and Julian weren't seeing eye to eye. They'll get offers for him. And, I think they'll test the market. They'll see what it is and they'll determine what they're doing from there.
Two impending free agent defensemen, Torrey Krug, reading his comments at the farewell Zoom or whatever you want to call it. It sure sounded like he's accepted the fact that he's done in Boston. Do you agree there? And I guess Alex Pietrangelo, is there enough money freed up there in St. Louis for him to return? Or what's your read on who might be in the bidding for him?
Well, I mean, who wouldn't? You know, those are two guys I think that are going to do well. You know, Petrangelo, I think it's that problem. And if you listen to Doug Armstrong yesterday in the conference call, like, it's a battle. I think Petrangelo is disappointed, very disappointed the way negotiations have gone for him, that they reached extensions for some other players and there really hasn't been a lot of movement for him. I think that's emotional now. Emotions always make that more difficult. You know, I always worry about saying this because I could hang up the phone and hear that he's reached a contract extension, but I just think it's been a lot harder than everybody there expected. Krug, you know, like you said, you know, I think he wants to be a Bruin. I think the Bruins are there. It's clear that they're at a crossroads now. You know, where do they want to go here? And they talked about sacrificing some defense for offense. That says to me that they've considered the possibility that this is it. And as Krug said, there haven't been a lot of negotiations. I would expect that they would take one more stab at it. But, you know, I mean, if the player's not optimistic, he's got reason to be not optimistic.
Closer to home, the Flames are, I guess, still looking for a head coach. Do you expect Jeff Ward to be the guy, or what's your read?
I lean that, yes, he's got a good chance of keeping the job. I haven't heard that they've reached out to anyone. That doesn't mean they haven't. It just means that I haven't heard it. I really do believe, as I reported on the weekend, that your GM wanted to make a decision by probably the end of next week. I just think he doesn't want this decision to hang over the team. But I do think there's a decent chance he keeps the job. I do.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. If not Jeff Ward, then who? And a lot of times word starts to trickle out if there's been interviews or permission given, and it's been pretty quiet on that front, right?
It has been pretty quiet to this point. I think the other thing that's an issue here is that, you know, there was a Board of Governors Zoom call this week where, you know, the league told the teams that they're still unsure when the start of next season is going to be. And, you know, a GM told me, it wasn't your GM, it was another GM, that, you know, he said that some of these teams that are doing hiring, are you going to want to bring in a new salary? Are you going to say, look, like, we're not hiring our coach until November or December or even, you know, later October because you don't need to. Mm. So I think that's an issue, too, is what are the hiring timelines going to be for these teams?
And I'll end here, I suppose, and it's just kind of just dropping a hook in the water. Pittsburgh, the reports out of Pittsburgh, they need to cut salary. They've been given the mandate from ownership. Do what you can to get some money out. Are you hearing any other teams as we watch teams try and A, scramble to get under a flat cap, and B, cut payroll for ownership that needs it?
Oh, yeah. I think there's going to be, like, I think the teams that are not going to be competing for a cup, like, are they going to be spending?
I just wonder if they're looking to offload, because I look at Pittsburgh. Oh. Are they still looking to get rid of more money? Are there players available that might otherwise not be?
Like Jared McCann is a guy in Pittsburgh who I think is definitely available. You know, the hiring of Todd Reardon yesterday says to me that, you know, it's when they are committed to try to make Letang work. Those two have a long history together. I'll tell you this, Dean, like, I am definitely hearing that, you know, business is picking up. There's a lot going on, and not only in terms of trades, but I think teams are trying to get some contract negotiations done so they have a better idea of what they've got. And, you know, that's the kind of thing I think we're talking about here. I do think there's a lot of movement going on out there. I think Boston's going to be fascinating because they've got to decide what they want to do. And I'll tell you this, I'm really curious to see what Florida does now that Bill Zito's in there. You know, are they a team that takes maybe a step back to step forward? And that could be very interesting with some of the players that they have there.
And lastly, Fleury or Leonard tonight?
I think it's going to be Leonard.
All right. Thanks, Elliot. Ooh. Have a fine long weekend.
Wow.
For as much of a long week.
I totally forgot it was even a long weekend.
Get to work.
Have you told the boss you're not coming in?
Yeah, tell him. Let him know. Thanks, Elliot. Have a good week, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.